On the outside, it was all beautiful. Everything was going well. Behind closed doors, I was completely broken. And I'll never forget, Rob, like January 1st, 2014 was the first day that I ever experienced a full-blown panic attack.
All right, welcome to the podcast where we dive in on relationships, love, lust, dating, science, philosophy, psychology, all that stuff relates. I just bring all these topics in together because, you know, relationships embodies this whole kind of an idea. And so if you're into this type of information, then subscribe to us over on iTunes, on Spotify, YouTube. Hit that bell button, get all of our updates. You'll never have to search for another episode again. Today, we have an awesome, awesome guest. It's the first time I'm ever interviewing a high-performance coach. It's an amazing feeling knowing that, you know, we have a lot of mutual friends as well, so we can build off this conversation. We'll get into all that, but I'm excited for this conversation because not only has he been through a lot of stuff in his own personal life that, you know, can relate to a lot of my listeners here today. He has solutions, and that's the most important thing. He's got tactical advice that he's going to bring to the show that, you know, anyone who is in quarantine or post-quarantine can take this and really just apply to their life and become the person or step into the person that you were destined to be. So Mike Sesniak, I hope I said that right. Thank you for coming on the show, my man. This is going to be a great conversation.
Rob, thanks for having me. And yeah, you nailed it on the pronunciation. I'm excited, man.
All right. Sweet, sweet. Yeah, we're going to jump right into this conversation, man. You have an interesting life. You obviously have your own podcast. You've interviewed a lot of other people. So that perspective, I'm really, really interested to gain some knowledge and some perspective from you. So let's start out wherever you want. You know, dial the clock back however far. Bring us to a certain point where this all kind of culminated for you. Where was that tipping point for you?
Yeah, so I think it probably makes sense. I mean, my whole life revolved around where I could play soccer in college. You know, when you're younger, they're like, what do you want to be when you grow up? And at the time, all I cared about was making a lot of money so I could retire young and open a pit bull rescue foundation. Like when I was a kid, that was all I cared about. And you know, I grew up in a family that was very much like, cool, we'll like most definitely play soccer in college and use it to get a good education and maybe get scholarships somewhere, but you're not going D1 just for the sake of soccer, right? Like you're gonna, if it ain't a good public or good, if it isn't a good educational school, like you're not gonna go type of thing. And I had one conversation with my guidance counselor who said, hey, Mike, you're good at math and sciences. You should look at engineering. I'm like, cool, man. Like, do they make a lot of money? Because again, the goal, make a lot of money, retire young, Pitbull Rescue Foundation. And he said, yep. I'm like, cool, sign me up. Happened to get recruited by a really good school and the rest was history. So, you know, I finished with a computer engineering degree and went down to Wall Street. Spent a year and a half by it was all said and done. Unpaid training for 6 months. And then like giving them a window of time to, you know, try and place me in a client. That didn't work out. Got to walk away for free, find my own job that paid me double what the other company was going to pay almost. And I spent 5 years at that company. And I say that part because it's really how I funded all the entrepreneurial pieces of my journey. I started three companies while I was there. And the third one was my coaching and consulting company. And I built that for a year and a half as a side hustle. After that, finally took it full time and never looked back. So a lot happened in that like 7 to 8 years of, I guess, like adult life post college. But it's been really exciting. And whatever from that journey, I know there's a couple of pieces you want to dive into, but whatever's valuable for your audience, man, like let's go deeper on it.
Yeah, man. One of the areas that I definitely want to dive deep on was you mentioned something in some of your bios that you had a lot of, I guess, bouts with anxiety and dealing with like that kind of stress and work pressure. I even read that you were doing like 60, 80 hour work weeks, you know, all before you're like 24 and you burned out. So like, Take us back to that part in your life and explain why, you know, I mean, there's probably people listening in right now who's probably in that moment right now. Like, obviously we're quarantined and we kind of slowed down, but maybe they were burning out. You know, maybe they were at a point in their career where they're like, damn, like, this is too much for me. I'm glad I kind of had this break. So like, bring us back to that spot and also kind of like shed some light on, like, you know, for people who are in that, because that's difficult. Like, that's not sustainable long term. So, you know, talk about a little bit about how people can come out of that trap.
Yeah. So for me, in my early 20s, you know, I kind of got into engineering because, again, early on, it was make a lot of money, retire young, open a pit bull rescue foundation. And software engineering in particular is one of the few areas outside of owning your own business or outside of being in a commission sales role where you essentially own your own business anyway. Like, outside of those two, it's as close as you're really going to make to like FU money, right? Outside of like going to get another 8 years worth of education and becoming like a doctor or lawyer or something like that. And even then, a lot of times it's still comparable with respect to profitability after you pay your insurance and all that sort of stuff. So early on, I was making a lot of money. Every year was like my trajectory in corporate was very, very linear. Every year was either a big pay raise or a big promotion. And by the time I was like 25, I already had this six-figure salary, the senior engineering title, the luxury apartment, like all the stuff I thought I wanted, all the stuff we thought we were like striving for that like validated that I was doing the right thing. But behind closed doors, as we often hear in these stories, like it wasn't like that. You know, like on the outside it was all beautiful, everything was going well. Behind closed doors, I was completely broken. And I'll never forget, Rob, like January 1st, 2014 was the first day that I ever experienced a full-blown panic attack. And to give people context, at that point in time, I had no idea what anxiety was. I had never experienced anything like this. And I had never experienced, like, didn't know anyone who had, right? Back then, it wasn't cool to talk about anxiety and mental health on social media. And I didn't realize that social media was a highlight reel back then. And that played a huge role for me, which I'll get into. But, you know, if anyone hasn't experienced that before, it basically, it kind of feels like there's 1,000 pounds on your chest and you just feel like you can't breathe. And obviously it was New Year's Day when it happened. My roommate always used to go up to, I think it was Vermont, on a ski trip with his buddies from high school. And so I'm sitting alone on my like couch on the 14th floor of this apartment building on the Upper East Side of Manhattan. And I'm watching Captain Phillips, which I freaking hate this part of the story because I was so excited to watch this freaking movie, dude. Like, had been putting it off for like a year and a half, really wanted to watch it, and it got ruined for me because of what happened. But I remember, like, all of a sudden I start to go into this attack. I don't really know what's happening. I'm like, man, am I just hungover? You know, you don't really know. I'm in my early 20s type of thing. And but it got really bad, and I pick up the phone and I call my mom. Because in that moment, you kind of just like, you feel some sort, you seek that connection, right? Like someone to talk to. And I'm like, man, I'm not going to be that kid that's going to call 911 on himself. You know, like, is that really the route I want to take? And this was what's going on in my head. And I'll never forget, I had to press mute on the phone because I was head deep in a toilet in the middle of this attack because it got so bad. And that started about a year long journey for me of, you know, going to the doctors, getting my chest x-ray, doing the breathing test. Like, I thought it was a physiological issue. I thought my lungs didn't work. You know, I didn't quite understand what was happening. And it wasn't until about a year later that I somehow got introduced to this word anxiety. I didn't get diagnosed by my doctor, which I'm glad I didn't, because they probably would have thrown pills my direction. And I didn't really want to go the pharmaceutical route, just personal preference. And I started to dig into what that meant, right? The engineer in me had to reverse engineer what was happening. And what I realized is 1,000% of these attacks that I went through and endured, every single one of them occurred in a moment where I felt guilty for not working, right? And what I realized is I had zero idea what it meant to really be productive. I thought it was like doing things, getting things done, checking them off of a to-do list. I didn't realize that doing things doesn't matter if the things you're doing don't matter. And I always say that this kind of like cracked the door open for what would eventually get burst open and allow me to enter the space of coaching and consulting. But that was the start where I started to just geek out about productivity, get to understand what it is. And now in the high performance world, it's just one of the main pillars that we work in. It's just a fraction, but it'll always be like my favorite because it changed the game for me. So with respect to what you talked about earlier, the 60 to 80 hour work weeks, for me, maybe people can relate to this. Like, I have extraordinarily high goals and very, very high expectations for myself. And when you pair that with not understanding what it means to be productive and the fact that I didn't realize that social media was a highlight reel, I thought I was looking at the blueprint. I didn't realize people weren't sharing the L's, right? That's a recipe for disaster. And starting to geek out about productivity and really understand what it truly meant, right? Not working 47 hours a day, but doing the stuff that actually matters, that changed the game for me. So that was a massively pivotal point because I was into personal development, but you know, it was just this recipe for absolute disaster for me. And it took me about a year of being in that like really exploratory journey before I found this one piece that kind of put me on a different path.
Man, thank you for sharing that story, man. That's super powerful and super enlightening for even just me to hear, because you know, as much as I interview a lot of people with like, you know, crazy stories, crazy past and stuff like that, each one hits different for me. And like one of the things that are, you know, coming to my mind right now is just like this, the, you know, the very pinnacle thing that's coming to my mind is that mortality motivation that, you know, a lot of our mentors and coaches and people above us kind of talk about. And those things are super important for even like young millennials. People will think, oh, it's more of like a quarter life crisis type thing. It's more of like, oh, you'll get to this spot when you're 45 or 50. But I think a lot of millennials are facing this even right now, or even at the time that you were at 25. Like, that's insane, right? Like to be, you know, at such a stature at that young age is very impressive, by the way. But you know, I will also say that FU money also means for me is like not just, you know, being able to step back and say F you, but it's also the happiness and the I guess the gratitude that you have from all the stuff behind it. When you can say that, hey, I look, when you can look back on the struggle and the thing and be very proud of it as opposed to not, because like I grew up in a very tumultuous kind of life, man. I used to deal drugs and stuff like that. So like I used to make money like really, really poorly. Like I used to make money off of other people's vices, basically. And it wasn't something I was proud of, right? And so it's not the same as real FU money is what I'm trying to get at. And I think like that's the parallel I want to draw for other people, is that juxtaposition that you and I are having here, is that you went and even whatever route that you did, that FU money still didn't feel good for you, you know, as a person. So I think anybody listening in can definitely take that to heart and, you know, apply that to their life. What is it that you're missing in your life that that you need to go find? So Mike, you obviously went to go find that, right? And what I guess now let's paint a little bit of a different picture for the audience. Now, it was pretty dark for you. Now you came out of that, you started, you know, putting more effort into your coaching, put more effort into yourself, investing into personal developments and seminars and books and stuff like that. What was that one thing that if you knew now that would have accelerated your growth, that you could just, I guess, I mean, you can't really skip hard work, right? You can't do that. But I'm saying if there was one thing that you could have known that could have accelerated that, what would that be specifically?
And I, and for context, I wasn't coaching at this point. It was probably another 3 years or so, because I was 23, 24 when I had my first panic attack. And so I think I messed that. Well, I when I was giving the context of the corporate climb, I guess I used the 25 right there. So first panic attack, 23, 24. It wasn't three-ish years until I even entertained the coaching industry. People were trying to push me into it, like really people really close to me. They're like, dude, you could help a lot of people. But back then I saw like life coach in like 14-year-olds Instagram bios on Instagram. I'm like, dude, come on. And I just didn't want to be associated with it. It was just a negative stigma I had. It took a little while to give myself that permission. But, you know, I think the one thing that changed the game that I wish I did earlier is I wish I just found a way to invest in myself at a very uncomfortably high level earlier. Reason for that is it's the easiest way to hack the learning curve. And for me, there have been coaches and programs and masterminds and all these sorts of things that I probably didn't get the financial ROI that I expected out of it, but it always gave me something. And it rapidly advanced my learning curve very, very fast. So I would have been like, okay, cool. We'll get super clear on what you want, figure out who's done it, or figure out who has what you need to learn, and find a way to invest with them. The reason I wish I did it earlier is because then I had a six-figure salary to like help leverage that investment or help pay off those investments before I was just like, okay, cool. Well, I already jumped off the cliff trying to figure out how to build the parachute, but now I'm all like, you know, like there's a lot more going on. And I feel like I would have been able to condense the learning curve a little bit more, but that would have been my thing, is figure out who has what I need to learn and find a way to get around them, find a way to be able to afford what it is, find a way to get access to the capital that can get me those resources and that mentorship.
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, because, you know, that's, you know, the world that we came from, or that I came from actually, or the world that we are, I guess, have mutual friends in is what I'm trying to get at. It all started with me trying to reach out to people who knew more, a little bit more than I did, you know, somebody who I would love to trade places with. And Lewis Howes was definitely building a brand for himself at the time, where it was like this personal lifestyle brand. It was just all him. And, you know, I invested into myself at that time. And then what that did was, for me, it catapulted me into, you know, the growth, the amount of growth that I've been in the last 3 years. I mean, most, I guess, people who've gone to school for like 7 years, let's say, and have had successful practices open for like 10, 15, I've done all that within three, which is absolutely unreal with the leverage of the internet. And because of that, I think it's really important for people to, you know, invest in themselves. And so I just want to segue into a little bit into the things that you offer, because obviously you've been through all of this. You've had the time to think about what it is to get people out of this. And what I love about what you offer is you don't offer these like fluffy type of kind of, you know, it's very, really direct, fear-based kind of, you know, let's get to the core of what it is that you're afraid of, right? And I love this whole fear hacking concept. So I want to dive a little bit into that, because that obviously has a big proponent onto why you do the things that you do. So let's talk a little bit about why the fear hacking and why that's so essential for, you know, other people going through this process right now, this self-development journey.
Yeah, absolutely. Fear hacking, actually, it was written on a flight home from one of the summits, which you might have been at when Mel Robbins and Brendon Burchard were there that year. But for me, fear hacking was a practice that I was doing for myself a lot, and not just in the business stuff. It started in the life stuff. You know, I was exiting a previous relationship where, you know, sometimes when you're, whether it's a relationship or a friendship or a business partnership or whatever, like sometimes you spend so much time trying to fix something that like wasn't supposed to be fixed, and you tend to forget other parts of you. Or maybe you're just going so far in on a project that you're working on where all of a sudden like you neglect the other parts of your life. That was kind of what happened to me. And I used this as a practice to really like get back parts of myself that made me, but I lost. And what I realized is, wow, okay, well, this worked. I wonder if I could do it for the business as well, right? And then I realized the versatility of the product. And I think another reason that I was doing these things is, even before that, these panic attacks, they would put me in like 2 to 3 day funks every single time. And the one thing I would be able to do is cling to my personal development. But in those moments, I would lose, like the business I was building tanked because I wasn't focusing on what was making money, right? It just wasn't happening. So these were opportunities for me to figure out how to leverage the decision-making process. And the way that I thought about it was, okay, if we really boil it down, it comes down to pain versus pleasure, right? We're either seeking pain or avoiding pleasure. when it like really simplify it. And obviously, like, there's a lot more to it, but if we're going to simply talk about this, sorry, my dog is freaking out behind me. Shaq, can you stop?
It's okay.
Door right now. People probably heard him like whimpering before. I'll let you
know. Yeah, this is what this is what we got to deal with during the quarantine, right?
I mean, I know,
we have boxes at home, right? And we're just doing this thing from what, as best as we can. So I'm pretty
exactly.
sure
he's gonna understand. Exactly. So I was like, okay, well, it's either seeking pain or avoiding, or seeking pleasure or avoiding pain. Right. And if we say avoiding pain, we like fear is basically synonymous with this. But when you and I say fear, like most people listen to this, the first thing that pops into their head, and by the way, this is normal, like heights, loud noises, the dark, coronavirus, right? Like public speaking, all these things that paralyze us, which used to be very, very valuable, right? Like we don't want to. We want to avoid the saber-toothed tiger. It's a very, very good mechanism that's built into our 2,000-year-old brain, but the world has shifted. So I'm like, okay, well, if the most powerful source in the entire decision-making process is fear, one of the most powerful sources, why are we not leveraging it? Why are we only getting paralyzed by it? It just didn't make sense to me. So I got connected with the science of why that worked, and I'm like, ha. That's why everything I've been doing worked. But if you remember, I was resisting the coaching industry for many years at this point. But at that summit event, I met Brendan Burchard, who's the world's leading high performance coach. And, you know, I, for whatever reason, chatting with him, hearing the words high performance, which I could resonate with, you know, college athlete, competitive power lifter, like that just, those were words I could vibe with. And it just gave me permission to enter that space. And it also, for me, honestly, I have an engineering background, so I'm very like data and numbers driven. And the high performance world is very much backed by science. It takes a very pragmatic approach to a seemingly like woo-woo world at times. So for me, it was like the permission I needed to enter the space. And fear hacking was that vehicle that I started with. So I literally wrote the Fear Hacking Academy on the flight home from that event. And it's really just a practice, like, at the end of the day, everyone listening to this, we know what we need to do to get to that next level for the most part. Like, what would get you more results in your business, or what would get you more sales in your business? We know. And if we don't know, we know at least what we can, where we can look to find the answer. This is just a practice to do all of it faster. That's it. Think of it as like a sales blitz type practice, but in an educational way. So I just take clients through that practice over 90 days together, and it's a pretty cool experience.
I love that, man. And you know, if anybody who's obviously in need of some kick in the pants, you know, I definitely get in on Mike's radar. So we'll get an opportunity, like we'll put up a link and you'll have an opportunity to get a hold of Mike and things like that. But in the coaching world, but you know, this is a relationship show. So we want to dive in a little bit about, you know, your personal relationships and, you know, things that, you know, you can shed some light on. Obviously, there's some obvious experiences that you've been through. We had a conversation a little bit off air about, your dad being a divorce lawyer. So I know nothing really comes to your mind and you'd mentioned something like that. But, you know, we've had a little couple minutes here to think about something. But I don't know if anything comes to your mind. I really want to explore that dynamic just because, you know, relationship lessons, they come from our parents. They come from our mother and our father, even indirectly or directly or indirectly. And so I don't know if there was a sort of energy that your dad gave, or if there was some actual tools that he was just like, hey, Mike, you know, I think you should do X, Y, Z. You know, is there anything like that that might have rubbed off on you in that way? And I know you're playing with your dog right now, so it's all good. But, you know, just I guess like it's important, you know, for all of us listening in, if we take the deep dive on, you know, not just our parents, but their parents too, if we kind of like understand where they came from, it gives us a better understanding of like how we approach relationships. So I'm just very curious as to, you know, like that relationship that you have with your father.
Yeah. So yeah, my dad did a lot of matrimonial work, not so much anymore, but now more like adoption type work. In some parts of his practice, but he was always representing the kids for the most part. I believe. I didn't really talk to him about it too much, but, you know, it was, I don't know, my parents are still together, thankfully. I know that that's not that common nowadays, so I'm super grateful to be, you know, in a very, like, I don't know, like, tight-knit family. But yeah, I mean, I guess just, like, hearing about the fact that that was kind of a thing and that sometimes it was, like, not a great situation was very, like, foreign to me as a kid. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how that necessarily impacted me. And again, he doesn't really do a whole lot of it anymore. But he did probably during my childhood. So that was like one leg of his practice, I guess.
I see. So it wasn't just like all family and relationship law. It was just kind of like, you know, parts of his practice. It wasn't his main focus or anything like that.
Yeah, exactly. So
just, I mean, curious.
With any law practice or any like practice in general, I mean, this is a really good example. We're in the middle of what a lot of people have been expecting for a long time, which is this economic downturn. I don't know what word they're using nowadays. Maybe they're calling it a recession. I know a lot of people that think that this will go down in history as like more like, I don't know, in what's the right word? Like a bigger deal than the Great Depression from an economic standpoint. Mm-hmm. And right now businesses are pivoting. So I think that law practices, maybe even medical practices, I don't really know, but a lot of businesses have to pivot, and whether it's an economic downturn or not. And I think that when you have such a widely applicable skill set such as law, like there are so many, you don't need a different degree to practice a different type of law. It's just like whatever you're very well versed in, you could do. And I think that that's probably pretty common, that not probably, it is common for a lot of people to have different like areas of focus. So yeah
that makes sense. Do you have siblings? Do you have brothers and sisters?
Yeah, I have a younger sister. She's 4 years younger than me to the day.
Oh, you guys are born on the same day. That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's hard to do. That's wild. That's extremely hard to do.
Yeah.
But no, that's a testament.
One was early. So it was like before the comments start going hilarious about it being planned, like it was kind of a freak thing.
Man, that's hilarious. Well, that's a testament to your parents though. I mean, like sticking through all that. Were they immigrants or were they born in kind of the USA and all that, or did they immigrate from?
They were born here. My dad's parents were immigrants though. Well, actually my grandfather was born here and then went back to Poland to help on the family farm. Tough timing because then World War II broke out and he ended up in Auschwitz for 4.5 years. My grandmother was the opposite. So she was born there and then came here as a child to escape the Holocaust with her mother and a family friend. And they ended up meeting here. So my dad is like first, I guess you could call it first generation here, but he was born here.
Yeah. Damn. That's crazy. That's a huge story, man. That's like a, I mean, there's a lot to go through that, but I mean, we're not going to dive in there. Way too much, but it sounds like you're it came from a lot of like very traditional type roots where, you know, there was a lot of people our age, I'd say, who can recognize with that. I mean, my grandparents also went through like that war-torn era with the war and, you know, just, you know, even the Korean War in the 70s and things like that. So there was like, you know, back-to-back kind of things that happened. But for sure, man. Okay, cool. That gives a lot of perspective on like your upbringing and like, you know, so are you, you said you were in a relationship right now. You said you have a girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys have been together for how long?
Coming up on a year and a half.
Okay, cool. How'd you guys meet? Just curious.
Through friends.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, a lot of my... A lot of my friends, like from childhood, work at. Some of them are like the top personal trainers at the Equinox in our town, and some of them were salespeople over there. So a lot of them, like around that gym community, and my girlfriend was helping out with Equinox some of this stuff. She has her own business, but it's super seasonal. And yeah, so she would support there with some corporate events and stuff like that, because that's her background. And yeah, so met through mutual friends.
Nice, man. So a year and a half, that's a pretty long time. And you guys are probably, you know, looking at that abyss of marriage and children and all that stuff. So I'm going to wish you a little bit of good luck on that one, because that's, you know, those are tough waters to navigate. But that's cool, bro. Yeah, man, for sure. And, you know, there was a lot of that we could have pulled out of this conversation, but I hope most of you guys got some value out of that. I want to take Mike to a part of the show where we dive in on him personally a little bit more deeper. We're just going to ask some like random questions here. It's kind of like a rapid fire. And it's also like a way to manifest things too, you know, in this time right now. So it's like, you know, let's just kind of open up that Pandora's box a little bit. So you ready for the random five, my man?
Let's go.
All right. Okay. So if you could be any animal in the world, what animal would you be and why?
I've gotten this one before. And like my joke of an answer would be a giraffe. I'll give context to that in a second. But if I were to really think about it, I think birds are super cool. I've been thinking about that a lot. Maybe because it's like we're stuck in quarantine and I'm like going for runs outside and taking my dog Shaq for a lot more walk, looking up at like hawks flying around. They're freaking badass. I don't have a specific type, but I think that that'd be super cool. But I'm 6'5", and my friends always make fun of me for being a giraffe. So one time I got that question and that was like my knee jerk reaction.
That's very funny, man. Okay, what's your favorite book, or is there something that you're reading right now that you like to share with us?
Yeah, favorite book is a book called The Go-Giver by Bob Berg and John David Mann. My uncle sent me that book early on in my journey, and it absolutely freaking changed the game for me. I haven't met Bob or John David Mann yet. I had the pleasure of interviewing Bob Berg on my podcast. And he's just an awesome guy. And the content in that book is, it's just a good read. So I highly suggest that. Right now I'm reading something called Brain Maker by Dr. David Perlmutter. I just had to go and read it on the side. It's all about like how gut health impacts all of life and like brain health, which is really, really interesting to me, because obviously like I'm in the high performance world. High performance, people think it's like making more money and getting more of insert whatever quantifiable metric you're targeting, which is true. But how we define it is succeeding beyond standard norms consistently over the long term while maintaining positive well-being and positive relationships. And if we can't take care of our body, our vehicle, like we can't pour into other people. So normally I'm doing a lot of like, I just read Psycho-Cybernetics. I'm doing like a lot of more neuroscience-y type of learning, and this is really cool for me, especially since I lost two of my grandparents to Alzheimer's, and a lot of the early parts of this book talk about nutrition and gut health's impact on the development or the causal and correlational link with Alzheimer's. So really, really interesting stuff. I'm like three chapters in though, so I'm fired up.
Yeah, that's super interesting. I love that stuff. I eat up that stuff all day, no pun intended, but yeah. Okay, if you could hop on a plane right now, go anywhere in the world, where would it be and why?
Man, right now I want to be on a beach because New York's weather is crazy. If we weren't in quarantine right now, my answer might be different, but New York right now will have like weeks of 60 degree weather back to back to back. And then the other day I was going for a run and it's freaking like snow flurrying. Like what is happening right now? So I would probably go somewhere tropical. Yeah, nothing sticks out to me immediately, but anything with a beach and like light blue / turquoise water, sign me up.
Yeah, I feel you, man. Toronto's just the exact same. It's freaking cold out here. Last week it was like snowing. I'm like, God damn, man.
Yeah.
But you know, it's East Coast life, kind of used to it.
Exactly.
If you could meet someone who's passed away right now, who would it be and why? Doesn't have to be a famous celebrity or anything.
I would want to meet the Wright brothers. I think that their story is one of the coolest, if not, to me, it's the coolest entrepreneurial story of all time. For people that aren't really familiar with it, dig into that story, because you'll find out that they were just bike mechanics and they were actually like big corporations with tons of funding that were trying to solve the same problem, and they failed because they didn't have the passion that the Wright brothers had. And I would love to just explore that journey with them a little bit. I think that their journey is so cool. Close second would be Phil Knight, because the book Shoe Dog, the story of Nike, is just so freaking awesome. But yeah, it would be Wright brothers and then Phil Knight.
Yeah, Phil Knight, that's definitely a dude I'd love to have a conversation with too, man. I'm watching The Last Dance. I don't know if you're a basketball fan, but there was they were talking about the Nike story, how they pitched Jordan and stuff like that. But they weren't even the top company back then, so it was crazy what they did.
Yeah, my cousins are talking about that. I gotta watch it for sure. You can see the dogs. Yeah. I'm sure everyone can hear this right now. I'm gonna mute while you ask these questions.
Ears it's all good, dude. all right, this is the last question of the random five anyway. Do you have any weird eating habits? Like, do you ever get called out at the dinner table for anything? I mean, I get called out for all kinds of weird stuff all the time. I don't know what comes to mind for you, but let me know.
That's such a funny question. Weird eating habits at the table. Like, I don't think I get called out. My sister would probably tell me differently, but I don't think I get called out for anything at the dinner table consistently. But weird eating habits, I would say, like, I have a like borderline unhealthy obsession with pizza, which like was fine while I was competitively powerlifting. But now that I'm kind of transitioning out of that, it's not a problem, but like it presents a speed bump in my nutrition goals. And that would probably be it. Like my one of my closest friends in the entrepreneurial world, he used to run a big fitness account, and like his entire audience of like almost six figure, like almost, I think he had like about 80,000 people. His whole audience knew of me as Pizza Mike. So yeah, that would probably have to be my answer there.
For sure, man. Gluten does destroy the body, but pizza is I don't know, man. That's like sure. That's like a food. It's a food group on its own, you know. Like you cannot avoid that.
Especially if I'm from New York, you know. Like, which I get a lot. Right? Like people use when I was living in Jersey, people would literally like bash me on my Instagram stories because I would post like Papa John's, and like, man, I don't discriminate. You know, like I just don't. I'm not. We're not going to say that it's New York pizza. But it was around the corner, so I don't know. Yeah, when you're from New York, I feel like you have to love pizza.
Yeah, I feel you on that. Okay, last side question though: pineapples on pizza?
No. Here's why.
No.
Here's why. I've thought about this a lot because I didn't understand why people would bash it so often, but I really thought about it. And pineapple is like an incredible fruit, and pizza is an incredible food. But when you put pineapple on pizza, it like it gets all warm. The structure of the pineapple almost disintegrates. And I'm not going to like make fun of someone for it, but I just respect both of them so much that I'm not putting them together because it makes them subpar together, whereas they're incredible on their own. So that's my take.
I love it, man. Anybody who disagrees, you guys can take that up with Mike. But love it, man. That brings us to the end of the random five. I feel like I got to know you a little bit personally there, so that was awesome. Thank you for that. I just want to take a moment and just acknowledge you, man. You have a lot of poise. You're confident. You got a great heart, man, and super inspirational to me. Extremely insightful, and you're just a really intelligent man. I think that's like, you know, one of the top things that are coming to my mind. So I appreciate you, man, for coming on the show. Appreciate everything that you put out into the world. And, you know, I will be rooting you on, man. I have a feeling about you. I think you're going to be on stages soon. So wish you all the best of luck with that. And I'm going to take you to, before I take you to the last question, how can people get a hold of you? Where are you usually hanging out? Where's the, if people want to reach out, where can people get a hold of you? I know it's the Results Engine podcast. Go download, listen to that. But you also have a Facebook community as well, too. You want to plug that? And anything else that you want to let people know about?
Yeah. Rob, first of all, thank you. I appreciate you, man. This is a fun conversation. Yeah, the best place to find me, man, if this resonated with anyone, the Results Engine podcast, wherever you're listening to this, just type it in. It'll be a red cover with my mug on there. But literally just interviewing top performers in all different fields, getting into the nitty gritty of like, how did they get next level results? Not the fluff that's all over the internet that's cookie cutter and frankly, like you could find on YouTube, but like what it actually take, the stuff that's not as sexy to talk about. We talk about the same stuff in the community. We're creating a Facebook community. It's just the Results Engine community. I saw that you joined this morning, so I'm stoked to have you in there, bro. But yeah, man, if anyone has questions or if something didn't quite make sense to anyone, like slide in the DMs, just Mike Sesniak on Instagram, Facebook, all the above. Let's get questions answered because right now, especially as this is going, like as we're recording this now more than ever, we need solutions to what's going on. So if I could support in any way, whether it's through one of the programs or just a one-off question, slide in the DMs and please don't hesitate to ask. I got you guys.
Facts. All right. I'm going to put all that stuff in the show notes and you guys can get a hold of Mike all in one click, send him a DM and, you know, let him know what you're struggling with. And then, you know, hopefully he can help you out there. I know he can help you out. So, but yeah, man. Okay. So cool. I'm going to put all that in the show notes. The last question of the podcast, most people find me through divorce, separation, heartbreak, and it can come in not just relationship wise, but like even bankruptcy issues and like deaths in the family, like all that kind of stuff. It could be a really, really struggle and a pain point for a lot of people. And I'm sure, you know, you've been through something like that as well in your life. And a lot of them do come find me after this point of time in their life. And so if somebody's down and out right now, what would you say to them if they're going through a little bit of a heartbreak right now?
I would say keep a finger on the pulse of what makes you you and make sure that you're sticking to that. And to kind of go a little broader than that, you know, I talked about earlier, like you can't pour into other people if we're not full. You know, one of my early mentors said, you don't pour into other people by tilting your cup over. You pour into other people by filling your cup so damn much that it's overflowing and everyone else can kind of fill their cup as well. And there's so many cliches about it. Like you can't pour from an empty cup. You can't serve from an empty plate. At the end of the day, we have to make sure that we're taking care of ourselves and making sure that we're filling whatever it is. Because if we're not, we're going to burn out. We're not going to have the energy to pour into people the way that we would love to. So I would say that for sure. And somewhat related, somewhat indirect, I thought about this when I said keep a finger on the pulse. My good friend Ricky Mendez always says, like, oh, you don't have anything to be grateful for? Put your finger on your pulse right now. You feel that? That's a thing right there. And I think gratitude is an astronomically powerful tool as well, which I think helps fill that cup. So maybe that's like answer part B, but that's what would be my answer.
Man, that was beautiful, man. Mike Sesniak, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on the show, my man. Thank you. Appreciate you.
Rob, thanks for having me, man.